You're listening to Strictly Business Podcast with Lindsay Williams.
It's Wednesday, so it's time for Wayne on Wednesday with Wayne McCurry, Portfolio Manager at FNB Wealth and Investment in Johannesburg. Wayne, we didn't speak last week because of the public holiday, so a lot of water under the bridge since then. And the one thing that really stands out, I mean, apart from the inflation numbers and results from the United States of America, is the China story. And as a commodity bull, do you get a little bit disturbed by the fact that China's almost every single data point, as they say, that comes out is negative?
Look, just a small correction. I'm not a commodities bull. I, in fact, think commodity shares are terrible long-term investments. They are subject to far too much variability. But if you are fortunate enough to get the cycle right, you can make an unbelievably good return. So right now, the data that's coming out of China is exactly what should be anticipated in a commodity cycle, and obviously where we are now in the at the bottom of the commodity cycle. So it's quite normal to get very, very negative news. And in fact, it might even be a good thing to get negative news now, because the shares only get cheaper.
Yes.
My medium-term thesis, 2-3-4 year thesis, is that interest rates will be cut worldwide on the back of lower inflation. That will boost demand, and that will boost China, and the Chinese authorities will also stimulate their economy. And then over the next 2-4 years, we're into a commodity bull cycle, and you buy the shares now. You can never call the bottom. I mean, I thought Anglo American Platinum was cheap below 1,000. It's now cheap below 900, isn't it? Isn't it as low as that now?
I think it is.
Below 700.
Gosh.
Sure. Sorry, not even Josh. It's below 700, I think. I think it went slightly below 700 today. But, you know, the shares fallen from 2,500 to 700. You know, that is an almighty correction. And as long as the cycle, and no one knows, I mean, no one knows the future, but as long as the cycle does more or less what it does, has done in the past into the future now, this is the time to buy these shares. And in fact, it may even be a stronger cycle than normal, because as we've spoken about on many occasions, there's been no capital expenditure by the mines for 8-9 years. Nothing. Very, very little. And so you'll get a demand increase in an environment where there's no new supply. So it could actually be quite a nice little commodity upcycle. But of course, it's hard to envision that when all you hear is bad news and the share prices are collapsing around your ears.
Yeah. I mean, I'll just qualify you being a commodities bull. I should have rephrased it. I should have said that you have started to nibble away at certain sectors of the commodities.
Bull, yes.
Yeah. I mean, PGMs right you started bull, yeah. with. Yeah. And you're never going to time the bottom. We know that. It's a long-term play. But when the cycle goes in your favor, goodness me, it runs and runs and runs, doesn't
That's
it,
wonderful.
Wayne? It really goes. Yeah.
It runs as strongly up as what it runs down.
Yeah. Okay. So you're still nibbling away at these low levels.
Yeah, we're buying more at these low levels, yeah.
Yeah. As a friend of mine used to say, double up to catch up. Okay, that's good.
Yeah, look, as long as your main thesis isn't altered, you should be buying in just, you know, doubling up, buying more at cheaper prices. And you know what can derail the main theory is interest rates and inflation stay high and don't come off, you know?
Yeah. Wayne, the other thing that you're always very, very keen on, ever since I've been speaking to you, is the banking sector of the JSC Securities Exchange. And we had Nedbank. I think we've spoken about Nedbank since in our last conversation a couple of weeks ago. But since then, Absa has been out. And the market didn't like those numbers at all.
Yeah, Absa was a bit disappointing. I mean, they still grew their earnings. But yeah, I was expecting more. Because let's go through them all. Standard Bank.
Yeah.
They haven't given results yet, but they gave a trading update. I mean, that was just fantastic. You know, earnings up 20%. Then Absa came out and earnings were up. I forget now, but it was 2-4%. It wasn't much. Then Nedbank came out and their earnings were up 10%. So we're still waiting for First Rand. Now, First Rand, this is their year end now in June. So you wait a while for their results. But the fact that they haven't given you a trading update yet means earnings aren't going to be more than 20%, but they're also not going to be 20% lower either. Otherwise, you'd have got a trading update in either of those circumstances. So I would expect First Rand's earnings to be up 10-15%.
Yes.
Of interest, APSA's dividend was up a lot more than their earnings. And I don't know why the market didn't like it, because these shares, I mean, if you just take the dividend, and the dividends are going up, eh? Just take the dividend yield. You know, APSA, Nedbank, these things are 8-9% dividend yields, man. And I can't see the dividend being under threat, you know, a severe threat over the next 2, 3, 4 years. And you're getting such an incredibly high dividend yield. You don't often see the banks trading at these dividend yields. You saw it during after COVID. They were trading at these dividend yields. But you don't see this often, and that is the time to buy. And, you know, despite the volatility that banks obviously do have some volatility, but other than the COVID type of scenario or the global financial crisis type of scenarios, in other words, other than the 1 in 10 year scenario, earnings are actually reasonably stable. I mean, they're nothing like commodity company earnings.
And tell me something.
They're actually reasonably stable earnings.
Is there a relationship between international banks and the performance of South African banks? Because obviously all markets are interlinked. Or are they completely divorced from each other? Because we've had a rating agency downgrading medium-sized banks like, for example, Bank of New York Mellon in the United States. And there was threats of downgrades.
Yeah.
And the market got clattered, a sort of a mini clattering. Does it affect the sentiment here as well?
Look, I suppose there would be sentiment, some sort of sentiment and some sort of contagion. But earnings-wise, they're not related at all.
No.
You know, a bank can go bankrupt, and earnings are not related. But just to talk more about the U.S. banks, I mean, you must understand there is a very unique set of circumstances applicable there at the moment as to why you're getting these downgrades. And essentially, it boils down to the highest inflation in 40 years, the steepest increase in long bond rates in 40 years, and the steepest Fed fund increase in 40 years. So a lot of these banks were caught. They were just caught. You know, they didn't hedge their interest rate risk properly. In other words, they thought long bonds would never go up as quickly as what they did, and they got burnt on that. And that's why they're getting the downgrades now. So that's not the case in South Africa, simply because our interest rates went up, but they didn't go up, you know, 300%. They went up, you know, 3 times, because they were 1%, they're now 4% in America. You know, our interest rates went up within the realms of normality in South Africa. You know, in other words, a normal interest rate cycle. I mean, our inflation went from 3-4% to 8-9% at its worst. You know, in America, it went from 1% to 10. You know, in the UK, it went from 1 to 12.
Yeah.
You know, so this, so the shock and the mismatching of the risks and the mismatching of the interest exposure in these banks have caused the downgrades now.
It's interesting, isn't it, Wayne, that you get used to a certain market trend, in other words, low inflation,
yes,
super low interest rates, sometimes negative interest rates, and people become sanguine about it, and they sit back and they put their feet up on the desk, metaphorically, and suddenly it starts to rise, and they're completely uncovered. They're naked when it comes to hedging, instead of employing the same sort of risk management principles that they were taught when they first learnt to go into the financial services market.
And that's why I keep harping on about the cycle story, because it's probably the only thing I've really learned in investments, is that most of the stuff you see is cyclical. Because people get caught up so badly in current prevailing circumstances, and they become of the view that current circumstances will last forever. So in other words, like before the dot-com boom, the big commodities boom up till 2008, the low inflation, the tech shares only going up, Bitcoin only going up. You know, people get so caught up, NASPAS and Prosus only going up. You know, they get so caught up in a current set of circumstances, the Rand only collapsing. The Rand only collapses. that they think that current circumstances will prevail, you know, into perpetuity. And it's not. Most of it is a cycle. You know, just to come back to your point, you know, the guys in America were sitting with 1% inflation, 1% long bond. In fact, in Germany, they had negative long bonds. In Japan, they had negative long bonds. They just sat back and said, let the good times roll.
Yeah.
This is never going to change. Because, and what drives you into that sort of mindset is that, obviously, the only news you hear is the news that supports the current positioning or the current movements in the market. Because if that noise wasn't there, that's all you'll hear. You know, if that noise wasn't there, the market wouldn't be doing what it's doing. So when you're in a very positive or a very negative scenario, all you hear is either very positive or very negative news. You are completely, you drown in it. And you become so convinced, you know these old stories, higher for longer and lower for longer, and you know, you get so caught up in all these things. China's, you know, falling into a heap, because that's what you will hear, because that's what's making China, the share market, fall, is because China at the moment is falling into a heap. But it's cyclical and it can alter. It can actually alter quite much quicker than what you think. I mean, take the Federal Reserve Bank in America. Now, you assume that the people there of substance.
Yes.
You know, who've gone through cycles, who understand this, who study it, and have got all the support in the world to come to the right conclusion. You know, inflation surprised them. You know, if you'd have asked them 4 years ago, will U.S. inflation go to 9%? I think they would have died laughing at you.
Hmm.
And yet it did. You know, so you're so convinced that current circumstances are just going to stay around forever that you don't realize it's cyclical. It's the same as when there's euphoric circumstances around, and you know, Bitcoin can only go up, you know, next stop $100,000. You believe it because all circumstances support that, all evidence supports that, because that's what's happening. But it's cyclical and it changes.
Yeah, it does. And as I said, everyone got either caught short or caught long, whatever asset class caught they were long, in. Yeah. And they were just complacent, Wayne. As I said before, sanguine. Yeah. I will embellish that with the word complacent. It's their fault. I mean, you get these banks in the UK who are whacking up in mortgage rates, for example, bond rates in the UK for homeowners. And the reason they're doing it is because they hadn't hedged against it. So instead of ameliorating the situation for the people that have been kind enough to take out a mortgage with them, they just pass the buck to them.
I think with all the new rules, you can't actually afford, you can't do an interest rate hedge unless you're backed with an asset. So in other words, all of their mortgage bonds that they've issued of fixed duration and fixed interest rates, they manage that interest rate risk, but they didn't sort of put extra in the bottom drawer to try and cushion their borrowers, because I don't think you're allowed to anymore. You can't actually take such big positions without a backing asset. You know, if you've got an asset liability match, then there's no risk to bank capital. But if you go outside of that match and you either take out, you know, forward interest rate contracts or you take out interest rate swaps, and you haven't got an asset that where the value of that asset behaves in exactly, you know, 180 degree different to the value of the liability that you're carrying, I don't think you can do that anymore. So right now, if interest rates are going up and they've got to borrow at 5%, then if they lend that money out, they're charging 5%.
Yeah, but Wayne, there's a Treasury Department. Surely
that's
they
terrible.
Should. They
Make
should,
no mistake.
No, there's a Treasury Department at all these banks, a massive organization that says, okay, if interest rates are going to go up, then we're going to be exposed with these risky clients and these mortgage bonds, etc. That surely they're allowed to do something. I can't believe that the book is
smaller.
Closed.
I think there's nothing. I don't think it's anything like it was 20 years ago or even 10 years ago.
Hmm.
You know, the global financial crisis, the screws were turned onto banks worldwide.
Yeah.
And they can't, because let's just say they do that. They say interest rates are going up. We're taking out forward contracts. We're doing interest rate swaps or cross-currency interest rate swaps or whatever they get up to because they want to fix their funding at 1%. And it's great if it goes to 5% because now you fixed at 1%, you know, you swimming in money. But what if it had gone to 0.2% like it did in Japan or negative like it did in Germany? And yeah, you sitting with an interest rate cost of 1% and the current market's 0.2%, you are cleaned out. You lose share capital. You lose bank reserves. So I don't think they can take these big positions. They can only really hedge against an asset that they've got so that the two are matched so that they don't take interest rate risk. Like, I mean, I'm a director at Emira.
Yeah.
You know, we borrow money all the time in the market. We're in the market all the time. And our average duration, I don't know, let's say it's 3 years, whatever. Let's just say we've got to pay back all of our debt over 3 years.
Yes.
And virtually all of it is linked to prime. You know, there's no real fixed interest rate. You know, so, I mean, it, as I said, it has got a duration. So when prime changes, you know, the interest rate on whatever instrument we've issued doesn't change, but you've got to refinance it on a relatively short-term basis. So what we do is we take out interest rate swaps where we convert the link to prime to a longer dated swap so that when interest rates go up, we relatively protect it by that interest rate increase. So like in this period we've got now of rising interest rates in South Africa, our cost of capital has gone from 8% to 9%. You know, it hasn't gone from 8% to 13%. So you can hedge, but I don't think the banks are allowed to do this hedging anymore. In other words, they're not allowed to put capital at risk after all the disasters and all the bailouts that everyone's had, that all governments had to do. Not all governments, but the huge bailouts that the banks got at the global financial crisis. And even in the 1990s, you know, the screws are on banks now. They can't risk their capital. I mean, even here in South Africa, now, the banks used to be heavily involved in private equity, you know, actually investing bank capital into private equity in that. That's all finished there.
I don't know. We'll have to look into that. We'll have to look into the regulations. But it is a little bit unfair. Actually, it's not unfair because of banks. I mean, what was that famous bank, that rogue trader who brought a bank to its knees?
Yeah, I think of it now. Nick Leeson.
Nick Leeson, yeah. But what was the name of the bank? Barings, wasn't it?
I'll think of it now. It was Barings, yeah.
Yeah, it was Barings. Obviously, that sort of thing can't happen anymore. But I do think that you should be able to buy a load of options, puts or calls or something.
Surprising enough, it can happen because, surprisingly enough, it possibly could still happen because he didn't put those trades through the system. So the banks controlled and exposure level controls didn't pick it up. But unfortunately, the counterparty that he was transacting with, he had the position of authority. So the bank had to honor all of these deals, all of these dodgy deals that he did. But in fact, they weren't dodgy deals. All he was doing was doing exactly what we spoke about earlier on. He was doubling up. So he lost money, and then he put in twice as much again, and he lost that. Then he put in twice as much again, and he lost that, all in the assumption. You know, it's like playing red at the roulette table. You know, if you put double on the next time, double on the next time, if when you win, you get your losses back in theory. So he was just doubling up and doubling up, but he wasn't putting it through the system because he knew the system would pick up that something was wrong. And all of a sudden the counterparties said, "Where's my money? We have valid contracts signed for by your authorized representative." You know, cough up.
Yeah, he was punching,
so that could happen again.
He was punching the Nikkei Dow, I think, behalf of Barings, and then as the losses mounted up, he kept on hiding them, and that was the end of the bank, just because of one rogue trader. Let's talk about other things now, Wayne, because I noticed you went away and you went to the Pilanesberg. Now, the thing about the Pilanesberg is it's a nice sort of potted safari, if you like, if that's the word, game drive. Because, you know, you go to the Kalahari, for example, the vast expanse of the Kalahari, and go to a place like Swalu, and you can spend all day because of the vastness of it. And you don't really see anything.
You might see three birds and a dung beetle.
Exactly right, if you're lucky with a dung beetle. Now, the Pilanesberg, you know that just around the corner there's going to be something. You must have seen a few things.
Yes. Now, I mean, the Pietersburg is a fantastic place. We stayed at the Palace on a special, which is quite nice now at my age. I get special midweek pensioner discount.
Oh, yeah.
So it was very, very reasonably priced. And the Palace, I mean, it's over the top kitsch, you know, but it's actually quite lekker.
Are there people there now? There were
quite a few people. Yeah, the place wasn't empty.
Huh.
Yeah, there were quite a few people there. And you saw Southern Sun's trading update today. They were very bullish there. They said things are going well. But anyway, to come back to the Palace.
Yes.
As you said, the Pietersburg is potted safari. In a potted game, well, we don't call it safari. Yeah, that's what German dentists call it. It's potted game draft.
Yeah.
Because they know exactly where the lion is, the elephant, the rhino.
Yeah.
It's so small. There's so many people traversing that park. They're all on radio. So we saw literally the big five. We saw the whole lot. And as we were leaving, so the one thing that wasn't potted is as we were leaving, one of the people in our group spotted a leopard.
Ah.
And you don't see them often. And I don't think they know where all the leopards are because they move a lot, not like lions. But anyway, she spotted a leopard and ducked into the bush. And our game driver said, he thinks it's going this way. He's going to just drive down the road and take another road. And it should cross that road. So we ended up seeing, surprising enough, I don't think it was the same leopard. I think there were two of them. But anyway, we saw a leopard that walked next to the road and then cross the road right in front of our game drive vehicle.
Beautiful. So
it was a fantastic spot. But the point of this whole conversation was that he announced that he'd spotted this leopard and gave the references where it is. I'm telling you, within 10 minutes, there were 20 vehicles there.
Yeah, you see. Yes.
Now, surprisingly enough, there's quite an etiquette to this. If you called it and you spotted, you've got right of way. No one else can come force in front of you. If you want to drive to get a better view, other guys must get out of the way because you own this particular spot. So it was quite interesting that there's a whole little etiquette in the game reserve between, because there's drivers from Sun City, from lots of different lodges. And, you know, so it's not all the Pietersburg staff in their game vehicles. They're from all over the place. But it's nice. It's a nice place. It's very lekker. They serve a fantastic breakfast. We had lovely pizzas around the pool. It was quite nice and warm. Then at nighttime, we went to the grill house in the actual palace, and we had lovely steak. Other chaps had spare ribs. Another chap had a vegetarian dish, and the food was fantastic, and we had a grand old time.
Very good, and it's within striking distance of Johannesburg, of course.
Yes.
So if you
I found a new way. Yeah, okay. I found a new way to go there. You get onto you go over Hartie's, you go off, you go over that new bridge. Well, not new anymore.
Yeah.
You go over that bridge on Hartebeespoort Dam. They've built a new road over the hill. I think it's Moordenaarspoort Hill. And then you join the N4. And you just drive straight until you arrive in Rustenburg.
Ah.
And then you turn off and you don't go through all those little towns with the massive speed bumps and all the goats and cattle walking on. You don't go through that part. You know, those three or four little towns with the massive, as I said, with the massive speed bumps where you go to slow to 60. You join another road, you go through one little town. But that's it. It's a far better route there, actually. It's far easier to drive there now. Easy.
Okay, jolly good. I'm going to end this conversation with just a follow-up on what we spoke about a couple of weeks ago when I told you about something called a hogget, which is a lamb, which is in between a lamb and a sheep. It's between 18 months and 2 years old. And I got this hogget, and it's far too big for me, obviously. So I got him to chop it all up into pieces, you know, shoulders, legs, etc. And I had a shoulder of hogget. Goodness me, Wayne. I don't know if you ever cook lamb, because on a Sunday you normally go to your favourite restaurant.
No, I do cook lamb.
Oh, you do?
I have cooked lamb, yeah.
Well, then ask your butcher your favourite.
And in fact, I've done a shoulder as well.
Mm.
And I marinated it in Guinness. You know, I stabbed the meat a little bit and I marinated it in Guinness.
Okay.
And then when I bride it, I put lots of coarse salt on it.
Yes.
And surprisingly enough, molasses, a little bit of molasses on the outside, and it was totally delicious. But I must admit, it was a long time ago when I did that.
Okay.
I must actually think about doing it again.
We'll try and revisit it. And if your favorite butcher, who's a good butcher, knows his lambs, then he'll know what a hogget is, or rather he'll know what an 18-month, two-year-old one is as well. So delicious. I mean, you don't like game,
no, it
but it
fantastic.
Is a little bit more gamey than a lamb.
It's a little bit tougher than lamb, yeah.
Yeah, but if you cook it properly, if you cook it really slowly and marinate it in your Guinness and so on, yeah, it's very good. Anyway, Wayne, good to have you back. Thank you very much for your time. That's Wayne McCurry, Portfolio Manager at FNB Wealth and Investment in Johannesburg. And that was Wayne on Wednesday. The views and opinions expressed in these podcasts are those of Lindsay Williams and various contributors and do not reflect the policy, position, or opinion of any other agency, organization, employer, or company associated with strictlybusinesspodcast.com. Assumptions made on the analyses are not reflective of the position of any other entity other than the speaker or the author. And since we are critically thinking human beings, these views are always subject to change, revision, and rethinking at any time. Please do not hold us to them in perpetuity.